Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed basement, with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the best in late-night talk radio. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, I'm coming to you live from my little studio beneath the stairs in Old Thornhill, just north of Toronto. Despite the doom and gloom that surrounded most of us in 2020, especially these last 9 months, there have been a few brief moments of humor, comedic moments, the kind that usually rise up out of the darkness and tragedy. Back in the fall, when we put our clocks back 1 hour for daylight savings time, someone on Twitter remarked, "Getting an extra hour of 2020 is like a bonus track on a Yoko Ono album." And my apologies to Yoko Ono fans. The end of 2020 is in sight. We're not sure what 2021 will bring. Perhaps more of the same. Perhaps light at the end of the tunnel. Hopefully that light at the end of the tunnel isn't an oncoming train. Adventurer, traveler, truth seeker Brad Olson returns to Coast tonight with some hope. His latest book is the final installment of his esoteric trilogy. In Beyond Esoteric, Escaping Prison Planet, Brad details the war taking place for our minds and souls. Corporations, he says, have taken our governments in a new form of fascism that now incorporates high technology and artificial intelligence. The survival of the human race may depend on breaking the embargo of truth and collectively developing what he calls an uber mind. But truth always resonates. Beyond Esoteric takes off the kids' gloves and exposes the control grid extending its tentacles across the planet. Everything we think we know about the world and the universe in which we live, whatever we've been led to believe concerning the course of human history, could very well be completely wrong, distorted, misinformed. But the time is up for this failed and murderous system, he says. The old world order is fading, and those who see with new eyes are emerging as the future. Brad will be here in hours 1 and 2 to explain how we, the people, can finally flip the script on the elite globalists and take back control of the garden. Coming up in hours 3 and 4, just imagine you're watching your favorite movie at the local drive-in theater when suddenly you see a strange flying object swoop down from above and hover right over the movie screen. The object is metallic, saucer-shaped, with portals and colored lights, and is totally silent. It's a UFO. Cars start honking and flashing their lights. People exit their cars, pointing and screaming. Some drive away in terror. Then the UFO starts to move around over the theater, putting on a show that's far more interesting than the movie itself. It may sound like science fiction, except it's true. In his unique and groundbreaking new book, UFOs at the Drive-In, veteran UFO researcher Preston Dennett documents more than 100 first-hand cases in which UFOs have targeted drive-in theaters. He'll share as many of those cases as time permits. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler. Hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come warm yourself by the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Brad Olson is an adventurer, world traveler, the author of 10 books, including 3 in his esoteric series, Modern Esoteric, Future Esoteric, and his latest Beyond Esoteric, Escaping Prison Planet. His keynote presentations and interviews have enlightened audiences at Contact in the Desert, Awareness Life Expo, the 5D events, and dozens of radio and television shows, including Ancient Aliens, American Unearthed, and Mysteries of the Outdoors. In August 2017, Brad started hosting his own syndicated radio show called The Esoteric Circle. He's the founder and co-producer of the How Weird Street Fair in the Soma neighborhood of his home base, San Francisco. The Chicago native's esoteric writing continues to reach a wide audience while he continues breaking ground in alternative journalism, public speaking, illustration, and photography. Brad Olson, welcome back to Coast AM. How are you?
Hey, Richard, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Beyond esoteric, this is quite a hefty tome. It comes in at almost 500 pages. When did you start putting this one together? Was it pre-COVID?
Well, in fact, I did complete it during COVID, and it was a labor of love for about 6 years it took me to put together. The other two in the series were about 3 years each. So between all three of the books, it's been a decade I've been working on this, and this is all the chapters that didn't find a home in the first two books, plus a lot of new material, including up-to-date current information with the state of affairs today.
Well, when you started writing the book, could you have any idea what was to befall humankind this calendar year?
Well, I don't think anybody could have seen what 2020 was to bring. It kind of started out pretty nice. I was speaking at conferences earlier this year and was all prepared for a nice spring ski season up in Lake Tahoe, and all of a sudden the lockdown began, and we were all told to flatten the curve for a couple weeks. Well, now we're on to a couple months, and here in California, we just got new strict lockdown measures, including a 10 p.m. curfew. So I couldn't even be outside today right now if I wanted to anyways.
In the book, you give us a brief history lesson on how America, the Republic, was subverted, I guess I'll use that term. And you go right back to, well, almost the nation's inception, 1783, in fact. And you talk about King George III signing the Treaty of Paris. And just explain how, I guess, the oligarchs' control of America really, even though people were celebrating the spirit of 1776 and supposed freedom from the tyrant in England, they actually were sort of just signing over the store.
Well, that's right. And we all have to remember that we started out the lands of the Virginia Company. These were granted to the colonies under a deed of trust on lease, and therefore they could not claim ownership of the land. We had Sir Walter Raleigh, who was growing his tobacco in Virginia and creating a lot of wealth in these new colonies. Well, a couple generations later, we started getting independence fever, and that kicked off the Revolutionary War and the Declaration of Independence. And all the while, even though we won that conflict, the crown never gave up on its investment. It always has considered the United States as a possession of the British crown. And they were very clever and very persistent and always coming back and trying once again. And even though after the War of 1812 looked like we were going to be finally in a peaceful state with our newly formed republic, they came back with the 41st Congress and passed the Act of 1871. This is something in our history that not a lot of people know about, and it's not much in our history books, but the Act of 1871, which took place under a weak presidency of Ulysses S. Grant, who was an alcoholic and wasn't really his forte to be running this country, especially a bankrupt one that had gone through so much turmoil with the Civil War. And the Act of 1871 took place, and it made us basically a corporation with foreign leaseholders. And this is still part of the problem that persists today, that we are basically in the jurisdiction of this overseas corporation that basically holds us in this de facto or unlawful form of government, which can be seen as a corporate body of these controllers, the cabal, as we call them today, or Illuminati, as they were known 200 years ago. And they have been the moneyed elite. They've been very much concerned with control over the people, over the nations, as much as they can. But America has been such a independently spirited country that even though we have these things, and then, of course, we had the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, as well as the income tax laws in the same year, we've still maintained this independent spirit. And that's why right now it's all coming down to America as far as keeping this world free and keeping us from the fully embraced grips of Prison Planet. And a lot of that has to do with what's going on right now today in this country. But the world looks to us, and what happens in America could very well happen everywhere else, for better or for worse. But first, we need to realize that we are under the aegis of a corporate entity. And in fact, we are corporate chattel. That's why everything's in uppercase letters, from your driver's license to your birth certificate.
And right, I've heard that described as the all caps fiction. The all caps fiction. What does that mean, and what is the connection between the birth certificate in which your name occurs in all caps, and the I guess this idea that the United States is in fact not a nation state but a corporation. What is the connection between the all caps on your birth certificate and that reality?
Well, this is going a little deep into the minutiae, but it's still very important to understand that we can even reference the United States Code, those three letter words, all in caps, indicating the corporation, not the republic, the Act of 1871. The state unequivocally states that the United States is a federal corporation. So when we realize this, the corporation is not a separate and distinct entity from the government. It is the government. It is the extremely important, thus we the people is now we the corporation. And until we start to learn this and learn the minutiae, the details of who it is that owns us and what this is all about, how in the Act of 1871 it also created Washington, D.C., this 10 square mile federal precinct, which acts pretty much differently than the other states, if you may notice. We have 50 states, and then we have this District of Columbia, which is one of the three empires of three cities in the West. And this is really important to understand that the city of London, right smack dab in the middle of London, England, is another jurisdiction that is not part of London, not part of England, not part of the UK, as well as the third empire of the city, which is the Vatican, right there in the middle of Rome, not part of Rome, not part of Italy. So these three independent city-states within a nation have usurped and claimed most of the control over the Western world. And to understand how they did it through these codes and the different laws that got passed, especially the Act of 1871, we come to realize that we are a corporation. We're set up to be minions for this corporation. In fact, we're even traded on Dun and Bradstreet and treated from the time we're born, from cradle to grave, as a commodity. And people just really have to understand that they have controllers and masters more than they understand. And it's always hidden in plain sight, Richard. It's always, why is everything in capital letters? That's because you're being distinguished as one of these people being owned.
But this isn't all just about naked power and politics. You say that there is a war on not only for our minds, but also our soul. So that suggests that there is a spiritual or a supernatural element. Where does that come in?
Well, that's when it starts getting interesting, and then that takes on more of the Prison Planet model that we have been entrapped here in this world, and this controlling elite has this hidden power, the hidden hand, as it was called by Adam Smith, the economist, that pulls these machinations of power over us and gets us into the point where even our spiritual progress is hindered by these Empire of Three Cities, Remember, of course, Vatican City is in charge of spiritual control. And the word Catholic literally means universal, that this is how they want us to feel. This is how they want us to grow spiritually. And so to know this and to grow from it is very liberating. And that is part of the blueprint, which I put out in my book, Beyond Esoteric.
I want to go back to 1913 and the formation of the Federal Reserve. How does the management of debt or the creation of debt, how does that fit into controlling individuals?
Well, that's very interesting and part of the bigger question of how it is that they were able to rule over us and to take control of our money system, you see, because in the Constitution, it is written that we have the right to mint and create our own coin. But that's not the case anymore. Any bill here in America that you look at, you'll see it says Federal Reserve Note. Well, that was not the case originally because it used to be minted by the Treasury. In fact, JFK tried to bring us back and create Treasury notes. His executive order 1110 ordered the U.S. Treasury to issue a new public currency, the United States note. There are some very rare bills, $2 and $5 notes. I know Jim Mars, the late great author, used to bring them up to his presentations and show them. And one time I went up and looked at them. And I've seen them in currency and coin stores, too. You can still pick them up. And this...
Right, they were backed by silver, I think, right?
That's correct. And, of course, we know that Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971, and then the U.S. dollar became completely a fiat currency. But you mentioned debt, and that's the thing, because it perpetually puts us into debt. So when this Federal Reserve System took over, they put in the clause that they would print the money and they would loan it out to us at interest. So there was never an opportunity that we would ever be able to pay this off. In fact, the very last president who was able to pay off the national debt was Andrew Jackson, and he's on our $20 bill. And Old Hickory, as his nickname was also the last president to kick out all the central bankers. And that held them in check for a little while, but then they got in right after Lincoln, who also introduced the greenbacks. And they, too, had to change that because, once again, we would have our own currency. And in this American system, which really puts a lot of dependence on the individual and creates tariffs and keeps the money within a country, the British system, which we're beholden to in this money system with foreign owners of our Federal Reserve System, it's a closed system. So they just try to bleed every drop of blood out of a dead cow kind of thing. And you can see the way that India and other colonies of the UK were exploited in this way. But if countries are allowed to be free and trade within themselves and use their own currency, it's one closer step to escaping prison planet.
We're approaching the bottom of the hour, and we'll be taking a break. Let me just ask you very quickly here as we head into the break. It seems like, obviously, we've, in Canada, the United States, around the world, amassing huge debts, but that seems to be this debt spending has kicked into overdrive since COVID. Of course, some of that has been in an attempt to bail out small businesses or give them some relief, not much. But for example, here in Canada, we now have a debt of over $1 trillion, keeping in mind we're a country of 36 million people. If I didn't know better, and I know many people are thinking the same thing, it's like they are deliberately trying to bring this global financial system down. Just give me kind of a quick yes, no, and then we'll head into the break and discuss after.
Yes and yes. I mean, virtually every country around the world is fully loaded with debt. Who do we all owe this money to? Well, just basic accounting, if you have a ledger sheet and one side is debit and one side is credit, well, somebody owns all the debt. So I love the meme that says, who do we owe these billions and trillions of dollars to? Jupiter? So they're out there and they control our nations that way. In short, that's
all right.
What's going on.
All right, Brad, we'll pick it up on the other side. Brad Olson. We're talking about his new book, Beyond Esoteric, Escaping Prison Planet. Back with more of Coast to Coast in just a moment. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. Life on Mars could be possible after a genius plan sculpted by the late Professor Stephen Hawking, which laid the foundations for humans to colonize the Red Planet. And incredible footage from Professor Hawking's Into the Universe documentary reveals the physicist had already planned it all out more than a decade ago. He said, quote, one day I think it will be possible to drastically alter conditions on Mars, perhaps using space-borne mirrors to supply warmth and power. With perfectly foreseeable technology, much could become possible. He said, if we could erect giant domes made of glass and plastic to block out the radiation, we could enrich the atmosphere. 500 years from now, which is a short time, he said, I think Mars will have its own language, its own currency, its own cuisine, although I bet you'll still be able to get a burger somewhere. He said, it's clear that as the universe begins to age, even advances like these will not be enough to guarantee humanity's existence for a very long time. Professor Hawking, who passed away in 2018, did not think Mars would be able to serve as a home for long. He believed a mysterious form of energy known as dark energy would one day pull space apart. And you can read more of that article in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my conversation with Brad Olson on how to escape this prison planet when Coast to Coast AM continues. Brad Olson stays with us, and his latest, the final in his trilogy on esoteric is Beyond Esoteric, Escaping Prison Planet. We were talking about this, governments around the world running up huge debts, and I was saying that it seems like there is almost this deliberate scheme to collapse the system. And then the question is, what do they intend to replace it with? Any thoughts, Brad?
Well, this is all part of what we've known as the New World Order, which was established and determined to bring a one-world government, a one-world religious system, one-world army through the UN, and the whole concept that we can be controlled by this unelected technocratic elite. That we don't even really know who they are. They're like the invisible enemy. But once they can get us all with an RFID chip, that's called radio frequency identification, into a cashless society, they got us. There's no escaping. Then we're fully locked into prison planet.
Continuing on with this wonderful history that you give in the early going in the book, 1947 is a pivotal year because we see the beginning of, or the creation of, the national security state. We have the CIA, which formed, I guess, from the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. So we have the CIA, we have the beginning of the National Security Council. You describe the CIA as a private corporation which operates as a prostitute for global banking interests and the enforcement arm of the CFR. But we also, in 1947, of course, have the Roswell crash and the creation of Majestic 12. How are the two related, the creation of this national security state and the crash in Roswell?
Yeah, isn't 1947 one of the most interesting years in history? Just, I'll answer that in a sec, but just how also the Nag Hammadi scrolls and Dead Sea Scrolls were found, totally revisioning Gnosticism. And you also have in 1947 the end of Operation High Jump and Admiral Byrd getting out of Antarctica in a hurry after confronted with some kind of alien that had a threat that could fly pole to pole at incredible speeds as equipped to Chilean journalists on the way back. So then you have the creation of the CIA in 1947, as well as the crash in Roswell. Well, what is the parallel? Now we have direct link with alien technology that our scientists got to work backward engineering. And of course it went under the heading of national security and became a very difficult nut to crack for researchers like us to try to get to the bottom of it. But a lot of this is coming out now, Richard, and we're seeing the drip, drip, drip of disclosure where we get headlines and the Pentagon's telling us that these are craft from another world, and it barely even makes it through all the other stories that are going on of the day. But really, in 1947, it totally changed a new paradigm because that created the CIA, which came out of the OSS in World War II, was functioning in the same way, working overseas as a spy mechanism and getting their hands dirty and things. But the CIA just took it to a new level, and we're still unraveling the many, many things and the psychological operation, the psyops that have been performed by the CIA on us, on the American people, over the decades since their creation.
You spend some time in the book discussing the media's role, mainstream media's role, in helping to prop up the false narrative about UFOs and ETs that began, I suppose, with the creation of Majestic 12 in 1947. So talk to me a little bit about the media and how they have kept the masses sort of enthralled.
Well, it's so interesting. The day of Roswell, or the day after Roswell, title of the great book, was the headline that the military had captured a downed craft. So the media was actually reporting on it as it really happened. That was quick to change. Then they retracted the story. Then it became crash test dummies in a weather balloon or swamp gas or any number of cockamamie stories to distract us from what was really happening. And they realized they had to get the media on board with what narrative they were trying to advance. So this is the beginning of Operation Mockingbird. And this was putting plants in all of our media organizations and controlling the flow of narrative. It's more important to control the narrative, to control the people, than it is even with the money system. This is how deep it goes, and this is how an integral part the media has had in shaping this false reality that we find ourselves in. So only by understanding that the media is really corporate propaganda, and if you do what they tell you to do, then you're pretty much following what the New World Order has in mind for us. So I just urge people to look at other points of view, other alternative media sources, and other ways to explain the world we live in today. Because we're also, remember, omission is a form of lying. What we're not being told also speaks volumes, and there sure is a lot of that. I've written 3 pretty hefty books on everything we're not being told.
I guess it's on this point, the control of the mainstream media, that we start to see cracks in the system, because we're no longer living in mass society, mass communication, mass society. We're now in a network-type society. This is something that Dr. Steve Turley talks a lot about on YouTube. He's a terrific philosopher, writer, The idea now that we can circumvent the mainstream media, and we can exchange ideas across multiple platforms, and it's impossible for the oligarchs to sort of contain that information. So is this really the soft underbelly that is being exposed that we can exploit?
Well, it sure is. And the elite did not want the internet to be open to the masses. One of the Rockefellers was famous in saying, we should have never let it go. We should have always kept it in national security, just for government use. But they made that decision to let the internet blossom into commerce and all that it's become. And it's also become the alternative media. And that's what comes around and nips their narrative in the bud. Because now, for the first time, we have citizen journalists. We have people who can research things and say, hey, wait a minute, that's not really the full story here. Or give different perspectives that we're not getting from the mainstream media. So if necessity is the mother of invention, the necessity is people aren't getting the information that they need from the mainstream media, this dinosaur media, which is in the business of thought shaping, of creating this reality, this matrix, false matrix of who we are and what we're doing here in this world. So when that starts to fall apart, there have to be others to pick up the pieces.
To counter that, you talk about how President Barack Obama in December of 2016 signed quite quietly an act called the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act. And I believe it passed through the Senate quietly a few months later. Tell me what the intent of that act, the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act, what was that intended to do?
Yeah, I love that, because usually those acts or those names are exactly the opposite of what they really are. The Patriot Act, well, that's the unpatriotic act, to be sure, and Homeland Security is more like Homeland Insecurity. Well, this basically is another brick in the wall of whittling away the truth in media, which was very prominent, and there were laws on the books in the 1950s, the Smith-Mundt Act, which designated truth in advertising. Slowly but surely, they've been whittling that down. And oftentimes, right before a large false flag event, there will be a rider in the NDAA or another piece of legislation that passes through. And then these big false flags like 9/11 and Sandy Hook take place, and the media is actually allowed to lie about it. They're allowed to create propaganda now. That's what's so crazy about the mainstream media. This is, everything they're doing is perfectly legal. So they can propagandize us, and nobody can sue them for telling us lies because it's been written out. The Smith-Mundt Act is basically dead now. If it wasn't, then nobody would be able to lie. And we certainly need to bring that back and bring truth in media and advertising back again.
So they're also up here in Canada, for example, the Liberal government is talking about websites. You'll have to get a license from the government to operate a website that's dispensing information. So it seems like they are really trying to clamp down on these alternative news outlets, citizen journalists, and so forth. Where do you think this is headed in the next? I mean, everything's changing beneath our feet moment by moment, but in the next few weeks, months, are we going to be able to talk about what we're talking about right now on the radio in a few months or a year?
Well, gosh, I sure hope so, Richard, but it is looking like more and more censorship is creeping its way in. Look, of all the things that 2020 is going to be infamous for, one of those things is the golden age of information has pretty much officially ended and died. So they have gotten control of the internet after all, and Rockefeller's dream of keeping it under wraps is happening before our eyes. Look at all the channels on YouTube that got taken down. Look at the raw censorship surrounding the election and so many other things where fact checkers come in and can take your page down. So what we really need is regulatory act controlling social media and the internet at large. But like you said, there's just more regulation. Like now we're going to have to get licenses for websites, and there'll be some bureaucrat somewhere that'll say, no, we don't want that one. Sorry, access denied. Take that website down. So we're in the post-golden age, I would say, for open media and information. And I think I was very fortunate, the zeitgeist of the age, to have the internet open and free and able to research and look into all these subjects that I was interested in and find good sources and able to cite them in these esoteric series of books. To be honest with you, if I was starting all over today and was going to try to do these three books, I would not have nearly the resources as I did 10 years ago up till today.
It all looks pretty bleak and grim, as if they, as you say, this invisible hand, the oligarchs, the owners of the system, have everything locked down. And it is indeed, as is indicated in the subtitle of the book, Prison Planet. And yet the book is filled with hope and promise and good news. Just let's talk a little bit about that as we head into the break at the top of the hour. We have about 3 minutes, and then we'll obviously continue afterwards. But why do you remain positive despite the reality before us?
Well, you and I met when we were on the set of Mysteries of the Outdoors, and I think you have a pretty good sense that I'm an optimistic person, and I think you are too, Richard. And I do believe that there is great potential for humanity here, that there is a silver lining. Despite the neo-fascism that's bearing down on us, despite the censorship, despite so many other things that are happening to people right now at an accelerated rate, there is still hope. There is still great promise that we're going to pull this off and be able to free ourselves from this financial slavery and so many other ways that it's tempting us to keep us in Prison Planet. And I do believe there is a golden age, and it could be very much foreseeable in our lifetimes. And that is the Great Awakening. That is why I think we're all here. We've accepted this mission to come down and be in these human bodies and be a part of the Great Awakening and to play a very small part, but everybody has a role. And the more people that awaken to what's going on in the world and how they can free themselves and those around them, the faster we're going to get there. Because the revolution is consciousness, Richard, and that's on the back headline of Modern Esoteric. Once we start to realize that it's us waking up that makes a great change, then this awakening is upon us.
That's part of, I guess, what you call the great ascension that's happening. And I often hear this discussed on the radio. We're heading into a new dimension. Some perhaps call it the Age of Aquarius. Maybe we can touch on that a little bit when we come back. Brad Olson is with me. And we will open up the phone lines at the bottom of the next hour for questions and comments as we continue to delve into the third and final installment of his esoteric trilogy, Beyond Esoteric, Escaping Prison Planet. Now, taking us into the break, here's Sir Paul and Flaming Pie right here on Coast to Coast AM.